Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Pretty good, Ken. Pretty good. Always happy to join you for this weekly show we put out. Unfortunately, Ravens dropped a winnable game last week, and a little bit of a state of flux as we head into Week 8.
Yeah, we don't know exactly where they are. Now, it's interesting that the betting markets haven't really caught up to what's going on with the Ravens. Ravens are still an 8-point favorite. They were up to 9.5 at one point. But given the news that's come out on the injury report, I would have thought it would be a lot different than that. And the Ravens certainly have some big holes to patch. But let's start with the biggest story, I guess, from last week, which is the status of Marcus Williams.
Yes, yeah, so Marcus Williams dressed for the game, but did not enter the game, which was, to me, a little bit puzzling. If you're going to dress Sanusi Kane and Bo Braid and Ardarius Washington, and the plan was to never play Marcus Williams last week, then why would they not activate either David Ojabo or Adisa Isaac to reduce the workload on the outside linebackers who've been taxed pretty heavily so far this season?
Chris Wormley, because they really went into this game with about 4.1 defensive linemen who were healthy, and that really bit them in this game.
Yes. So the rumor, and take it for what it's worth, this is purely a rumor, but the rumor is that Marcus was doghoused for voicing opinions on the game plan that were not well received by the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And Zach Orr had a quote at the podium on Thursday, and he said he's had conversations with Marcus, and he has handled everything really well. And Marcus said he's moving forward, and he said he's going to stay ready to play, and that he's always up for dealing with adversity. But the more we kind of learn about this, it doesn't seem like it was necessarily a personal issue or an injury or anything of that sort. More just a little bit of a disagreement that we've seen a few times during Harbaugh's tenure.
Yeah. It does not usually result in a deactivation. One of the things that I thought about this last week, the Ravens have insurance on Marcus Williams. Mm-hmm. If you're gonna have him active, he should be out there on special teams, even if you don't think he can play otherwise. And that would have allowed him to have another player on the defensive line. And the team is dying on the vine right now in terms of their defense not being able to stay upright. I mean, you got to have some way to deal with that. And Williams playing special teams would have made a lot of sense to me. Obviously, we all watched what happened to Eddie Jackson. That didn't work out. I think the team is highly incented to try and move back to Marcus Williams this week, but I'm still not sure it'll happen. Where do you stand on that?
I think he should be playing. I think he's a better option than Eddie Jackson, probably still a better option than Ardarius Washington. And sometimes you have to put personal issues aside and do what's best for the team. And, we don't know exactly what happened there, but, it's been a somewhat of a common thread a few times, where there is particularly between defensive backs and John Harbaugh, for some reason, seems to be the one position that butt heads at times.
It definitely has happened to other places on the offensive line. I think with McKinney and Gaither, if you go back mm-hmm. far enough, sure. Both issues with this kind of thing. And Tim Williams, got a guy who was, Harbaugh was openly salty about, at least with the Williams thing. He's like, we're keeping it in-house. That gives you a chance. It's the slow pause to stop the nuclear war. You know, it's kind of like the B-52 bomber, the B-2 bomber. It takes forever for that thing to get to Russia, so you can still recall it if you're in the process. So, it's just a bad situation, but the Ravens could have made it a worse situation by talking about it.
Yeah, they almost used similar phrases as they did when asked about Ben Cleveland, where they have all the confidence in the world in him and they know he's going to turn it around. So they're certainly keeping the door open. And hopefully this is a little reset, mini reset that Marcus Williams needs to regain his form, because the defense surely needs a steady presence on the back end.
Absolutely does. Absolutely does. And they, you know, you can always point at a lot of plays that lost that game, but all three times that Eddie Jackson touched the football were three opportunities to probably win the football game. And two of them out of that, you know, I look at those three plays and I say, that's about 1.85 interceptions they should have had on those three plays. And
agreed. And he's shown ball skills throughout his career in the pros at college. Apparently doesn't quite have that that cutting edge anymore.
Yeah. Well, what we saw what was we've basically seen what's wrong and what's wrong with an aging Eddie Jackson so far this year. So hopefully they'll have a way to do that. But right now, you know, shifting gears, the Ravens have a more significant, more pressing problem right now on the defensive line, not able to stay healthy. Justin Madubuike is the only Raven who practiced today. We'll get to the injury report in just a little bit, but I think we need to talk about the IDL shortage and just how they're going to fix that, because they signed Josh Tupou to the practice squad, which is a guy I am virtually certain will play on Sunday now. You have Wormley and Ravenel there still as well, but all three, you put Pierce on IR, you have Jones, Washington, and Urban, all are DNPs for two straight days. They must have a feeling that somebody in that group is going to play, or I think they would have made another move.
We're going to see how this shakes out. Maybe this is a situation where they say, we are so decimated, we don't want to risk any further mileage on these players midweek. We're going to give them all the rest of the week off and see how they go. But yeah, we are really cluster injuries again. Last week, the cluster injuries was corner, and it's seeping into certainly the defensive line now. Michael Pierce on injury reserve with the calf injury. Brent Urban exited after one play with the concussion. Really forced Madubuike into almost a 90% snap share. And I don't know what you could even expect for him, because you know you can't log that many snaps as a defensive player. As a defensive lineman and expect him to be able to generate a pass rush.
Oh, that's just it. And it was 42 out of 44 he played after the injury to Pierce. Mm-hmm. And the 31 of those were pass plays. The Ravens got zero pressures from the defensive line, including their $100 million man after the injury to Pierce. So it did not work. Obviously they're playing Washington pretty much every down too. And that didn't work out, but boy, would they love to have Washington ready to go this weekend in terms of the availables. And I guess maybe they know exactly where Urban is in terms of his concussion protocol, and they're still optimistic about him getting on the field, because his situation is obviously a little different. It really looks like they need to go get someone. They still have the name that people will bring up as if it's a real option is Patrick Ricard, that he could come in and play some more. Possible still at this point, or would you say near zero?
In an emergency situation, I mean, when you're comparing what he can give you versus what CJ Ravenel and Josh Tupou can give you, maybe it is. Maybe he can give you a little something. I think Wormley hopefully can eat up 20 snaps in this coming game. Really need to get Travis Jones healthy long term. I think that's really the key. Yep. To get in the defensive line back on track for down the stretch.
Yeah, wouldn't play him at all. I mean, right. if he's not ready to go, what I saw this last week, he just couldn't push off that foot at all. Mm-hmm. And he's just basically slapping people's arms. I mean, there's no point in having Travis Jones out there for that. The other name that comes up, and a name that could be in trades still, Calais Campbell for a return here would be cheap. He does not maybe exactly address what they need on the defensive line, being a bigger interior body. He's a big body. He can play three, no doubt about it. But yeah, they almost really need a lot of snaps out of a nose tackle right now is what this team needs more than anything.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And Calais, according to Brian McFarland, only about $600,000 or $700,000 would cost a team with no guarantees beyond this year as far as cap space. So, you know, I'd certainly be in favor of that. you got to look around on the street too. A lot of times these Jelly Ellis, Brandon Williams types are available and they don't necessarily need to be in pristine shape to play that position necessarily. So, it's time to turn over every stone after looking at this Thursday injury report with only one defensive lineman practicing.
Yeah, they've only got 2 days to get this right. I mean, this is just I don't even know if they can get somebody in. But the good thing about it, and I heard this made fun of Tony Siragusa once by Marvin Lewis at a recent event. He said that Tony never really knew the game plan in 2000. He knew his own duties, and he was pretty good at reading his own keys and whatnot, but he didn't really know the game. That's actually encouraging for this particular situation. Right. So, you know, you have a call and you know, okay, I got to read my run keys or I got to, you know, try to figure out what I'm doing as a pass rusher, but there's not a whole lot of complication to that nose tackle position.
Agreed. Yep.
All right. Should we move on and talk a little bit about the Deontay Johnson acquisition?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Cue us up here. 28 years old, out of Tampa, Florida. So he has that Florida connection with Lamar and Zay Flowers. 8.2 yards per target with Pittsburgh last season. Really, I think the best part about this trade is dirt cheap, less than $700,000, and basically a day three pick swap that probably is only going to end up being about 10 or 15 picks once you back out for the compensatory portion of the round.
Right. So and I think I looked at it, and the Dolphins did not have a compensatory six to trade back. So it'll be the Dolphins' actual sixth round pick, as far as I know, unless they acquire. Sorry, the Panthers. I'm sorry. So it won't be the Panthers don't have a compensatory pick. They signed a bunch of surplus free agents, but they also they could acquire a compensatory pick from another team and trade that back to the Ravens. So that's kind of an unfortunate situation. It might be an interesting thing since the Ravens have some compensatory sixths that they trade one of those to the Panthers for Clowney. And part of the value of that trade then becomes the further upgrade of the 5v6 return. But J.D. Clowney is still a name I think is a reasonable possibility.
Yeah, well, I'll just give you my thoughts on Clowney while we're here before coming back to Johnson. I'd be certainly in favor of Clowney. I think they have the ability to run more simplified plays and still win because he was the hammer on that defense. The issue potentially with Clowney is he's more expensive, $700,000 per game, and still has about $1 million guaranteed on his deal. And there's also $2 million guaranteed on his deal next year. So the void year, the expansion of teams using void years has made, I think, trading easier because a lot of these teams are just on the hook for the majority of what they sign the player for. But Clowney's deal, because of that $700,000 per game bonus, does make him a little bit more costly.
All right. Hold on there for a second. I think it's only $2 million in total guaranteed money. He's got the base salary of $1.21 million. Per game roster bonus is that's per game divided by 17. So you only have to pay 40 some thousand per game and then a workout bonus of 90,000. I believe he's only got $2 million for the year. And you know, it would be 10 17ths of $2 million, or actually it would be what? 9 17ths of $2 million he'd be owed, I believe.
And so about $1 million.
Yeah. So I could be wrong about that, but it's a small amount. And then next year he does have a base salary, but you can treat this as a one and done thing and cut him for next year if you want to. So he's a rental effectively.
Definitely a rental, but a rental, a worthwhile rental in my view. And I have some thoughts on the pass defense overall. We'll get to in the next segment. Back to Johnson. I thought it was necessary depth. I think you need more depth at receiver behind the big two. And I think Aguilar is best suited as a wide receiver four at this stage of his career. As far as what he brings to the team, I think he has some gadget ability to release, free up Zay Flowers to utilize a more traditional route tree. Very good yards after the catch receiver. Just that's the eye test, not the stat test, but the eye test shows me great. He's pretty similar to Zay. He really is. Not tremendous deep speed, but enough. And pretty much an ideal Z receiver. So I wasn't, you know, pounding the table for Deontay Johnson. It came out of the blue in some ways, in my view. But I'm happy he's here. I think it was a good move by DaCosta.
It's a depth move. They could be very happy that they made the move when they lose time for Bateman or Flowers. So if either of those guys gets hurt, then that would be. There's no way in hell he's replacing either of those two. There is no way in hell. So they might play a little more 11. I don't even think that's that great an idea, given this team seems to be fairly heavily embedded in the run game as they are. They're doing very well with that. You don't want to take away the Lamar Henry mesh point. You want to have Ricard on the field some. You want to have tight ends on the field because that's where a lot of the receiving talent is as well. When I compare him to all other options on the table, Ricard, other tight ends, either of the other two big two wide receivers, the only guy I see him replacing is you get down to Aguilar, and then mm-hmm. there's 260 snaps there. The guy who really loses in this deal is Tez Walker. He's now, sure. I think they're pretty close to putting on a season ending IR now, because yeah. they need the spot.
It's a vote of no confidence in Tez Walker for his rookie year. I agree with that yeah. completely. Just also to put a button on it. Well, first of all, the 11 personnel, it's a good club to have in the bag to pull out when you need it, mm-hmm. as far as using a golf terminology. But you could potentially get a comp pick for Deontay Johnson after the season. And he also should factor into the kick returner job that yep. was earmarked for Deontay Hardy. Horton, the special teams coordinator, said today that he is going to continue with Tylan Wallace as the punt returner in the interim, but he could just give you some juice there as a long-term. It's so cheap. It's a good move to make because of the cost.
Yeah, cheap insurance. I'm on board with it. There was a quote from Deontay Johnson that was out there that basically said that he'd been training at the Z and the F. Mm-hmm. So I think when he says F, I think he means flanker. And a Z kind of is the flanker, but that's okay. If he's meaning, maybe he's talking about a straight up Z and a Z who's in motion kind of thing is what he's describing there. But it could be that if that's all it is, then he won't take snaps from anybody, not in any significant way. No. I'm looking for, a guy who takes some of Aguilar's snaps. And I don't even think Aguilar necessarily rides the pine. Wallace also had 75 snaps so far. So I guess there's a pool of about 335 there, and he might well get two-thirds of that at kind of the top end. But I think if he were to get more than 225 snaps, 230 snaps the rest of the year, it'll be because somebody got hurt, not because he beat out some people.
Yep. Just go back to Eric DaCosta's analogy. I believe it was last offseason, if not the previous one, that wide receivers are like race cars and you got to tune them up and they got to be running. Yep. And if you look back over the snap shares of the wide receivers, even going back to the Greg Roman era, the wide receiver four and the wide receiver three did have a lot of snaps, more than you'd think, 400 in a season, 500 in a season sometimes, just because injuries do hit that position and harder than others sometimes.
Yeah. You want to take us through the injury report today?
Well, let's talk about the pass defense a little bit as far as sure. Unless you want to go there first. Yep. Pass defense needs some reinforcements as far as I'm concerned. 32nd in pass yards allowed, 29th in third down conversion percentage allowed, 32nd in fourth quarter points allowed, 32nd in allowing 20-plus yard chunk plays, and the third most points allowed in the AFC. Certainly not what the Ravens envisioned coming out of training camp with this star-studded secondary. And Roquan Smith was supposed to be the player that kind of helped bridge the gap to the new defensive coordinator. And frankly, he's been a big part of the problem. 9.5 yards per target allowed into Roquan's coverage, career worst. And he has zero quarterback knockdowns or sacks on 29 blitzes. So I think you need reinforcements on the front. I really do.
He's being asked to do a lot of things in as bad a way as you possibly can. So in terms of coverage, he's having to make up a lot of ground in the middle of the field. So I don't know where you're getting your targets from because there's multiple sources. But if you get
a Pro Football Reference, PFR.
Pro Football Reference, okay. Yeah. So Pro Football Reference actually is pretty good at right. moderating the targets and trying to give them to the safety. But
that's why I use them, yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's good. He's being asked to do more coverage than he did last year when he rushed the passer more. which is unfortunate, but it's also a function of some really poor safety play. I do think he's being hurt in that way, whether it's fair or not, and whether or not it shows up in the information there. One thing he's doing very well is tackling. He's made, okay, let's get this right, because I am going to use the PFF number on this, but he was at 59 tackles in a row made, and he finally missed one this last week, but it's still 66 of the last 67 he's made. He's got only a 5.7% missed tackle rate on the year. So it hasn't been all bad. And when you look at the Ravens' run defense, he's really the guy that is holding it together there. And if it's going to hold together during this challenged period, this walk through the desert they have in terms of the defensive line, it's going to be him that does it. But they need to depend less on him in the coverage game, which means they're going to need to have to get a player next to him that can cover. Hamilton is the guy. They had to move away from the dime this last week. They're 5 wins. They're 5-0 with Hamilton at the dime. They're 0-3 with Hamilton not at the dime. All right.
Right.
And they didn't have anybody, weren't playing anybody else there. It just, the dime results have not been perfect, but they've been a lot better than the other results that they've had against Oakland and Kansas City in this last week against the Browns. So they need to figure out a way to get Hamilton back there. And obviously that involves getting another player at safety they trust on the back end.
Agreed, for sure. Agree with that. I would certainly put safety high up there on the priority list. Certainly interior defensive lineman with this now rash of injuries is high up there as well. And I think outside backer is certainly another place that can be bolstered. You have Kyle Van Noy and Adafe Owe. Van Noy got off to that hot start. Seems like the workload may be taking its toll on him a little bit. You're not seeing necessarily the breakout that we hoped for from Owe. And they had Ngakoue rotating in last week with Tavius playing some snaps as a down, as a, you know, hand in the dirt player. Couple names just to mention, Za'Darius Smith, former Raven. Who knows if he poisoned the well back out of that contract 2 years ago. But he has a similar contract to Calais Campbell where there's no future guaranteed money.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient. Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
And it's basically $700K for the rest of the season. Azeez Ojulari, who's in the top 10 in sacks, was a player coming out of Georgia who's on the Giants, who also, I believe, is entering the final year of his rookie contract, who has been bandied about as a potential trade candidate. I think the secondary issues, you just have to hope that with cornerback, the communication improves, the players return to health, Marlon Humphrey, Nate Wiggins, and that I think you have the talent there. I'm not convinced you have the talent as far as pass rush. And just to interject a interesting tidbit from Jonas, the disguised coverages percentage and the sim pressure percentage between 2023 and 2024 are both within 1% of each other. So this idea that Zach Gore is making it too complicated and that's why things are going awry, I'm not sure to buy that. You just need the players to play better and maybe you need more talent.
So there are some other elements of deception. I track this week to week. I was in contact about Jonas once I saw that too, and I wondered from where he got it. He sent me information on where he got the information, but it didn't give me enough to know what he's tracking exactly. So a sim pressure for me occurs when two or more players drop from the line of scrimmage, and I report that every week in my article. A sim pressure, as this guy describes it, clearly is only 1+, or it wouldn't be in the 40% range. It would be something more like 15, 16%, because that's where. So if there's a shift in the number of twos and ones between 1 year and the next, it could still be a fairly significant difference. And I didn't actually look back to 23 myself to see how different those two numbers would be. My feeling is it's been a little less this year than it has been last year, that they did more of it with McDonald.
Delayed blitzing?
Delayed blitzing. So I do the off ball blitzes. So I do them differently. I haven't looked at that. I don't really want to say. What I should do is put all this together, and we can, if it's still a problem next week, and hopefully it won't be, then we'll talk about it then.
But yeah, things could turn around. I mean, we saw it the first year of Mike McDonald's reign as defensive coordinator. You put Kyle Hamilton and Nickel. I believe they got Tyus Bowser back and somebody else in the secondary returned to health. And they added Roquan Smith. And all of a sudden, you went from a middling defense to one of the best defenses in the league. So, yep. You know, it's not a lost cause. It can be ironed out. But another pass rusher, I think, would be helpful.
Okay, I want to go back to the pass rusher for a second, but I want to also plug a show right now because Slava Cooperstein and I did one last thing. We recorded that today. It'll post sometime after this show. But we're talking about the 2019 Ravens and their incredible midseason defensive rebuild. The circumstances, unfortunately, are quite different between now and then. But that you know, if you're looking for that sort of a 2019 miracle and expecting it to happen, the Ravens were never quite as bad off on the defensive line. And they were certainly never as bad off at some other positions too. And the one position where they were as bad off was inside linebacker, where it was a much easier problem to fix. And they, you know, the street guys that they had access to with Bynes and Fort were both outstanding. And, but anyway, I do want to talk about the outside linebacker situation again. It's not that I think the current set of outside linebackers has proven they're great, although I think Owe and Van Noy meet the standard that you want, but I'd like to have a third guy who's as good. The problem is the marginal return on acquiring a outside linebacker is much lower than the marginal return right now on an inside interior defensive lineman or a safety. I just think in one case, you're filling an absolute hole that I can't even see the bottom of at safety or defensive line. And in a third case, you're having to push somebody off the roster who might not be performing how you want, but it's also a lost roster spot and some potential, loss of future value there. And one player that may have to go if they acquire an outside linebacker is Ajabo.
Yeah, it could be. I'd hope that they'd be able to find an IR stash, whether that's Isaac or somebody else, to keep to keep all your poker chips in the reserve. But I saw I'm sure you saw the trade of Joshua Uche to the Chiefs last week, and that would have been a player that I was sort of surprised DaCosta wasn't in on and wouldn't have beat that offer, because he's a pretty pretty potent designated pass rusher.
Yeah, it's not that I would have been opposed to that sort of thing. Again, it's a matter of how do you mute your roster to make that move. Let's talk about who gets cut next on this team, because there's only one obvious cut to me, and that's Collier getting cut for Mitchell whenever he comes back. Other than that, you got Tez Walker to IR. You might have either Ajabo or Adisa Isaac going to IR, but Ajabo and Isaac right now are healthy scratches.
I think you got to look at the safety position. Some of the special teams only safeties, Bo Braid, Sanusi Kane, they would be next on the chopping block as far as a minor injury. Precautionary trip to injury reserve because of a minor injury potentially.
Okay. What about a cut of either of those two?
I prefer to cut Kane, to be honest, because I think Braid gives you some long-term defensive ability. I think Kane's purely a dime backer, special teams guy. But I think, sometimes I don't want to get too married to some of these late round players and late round picks. They are, for the most part, replaceable and interchangeable in the next cycle through future day three picks or undrafted free agency.
Yeah, very, very true indeed. And I think I'd also extend that probably to Ajabo and say, whatever we're expecting for Ajabo, it's a sunk cost. And, in terms of the draft capital expended, he hasn't met expectations. And the fact of the matter is, we need to have a lower floor and ceiling for where we expect him to be. I'm not seeing it. He's really not a particularly physical player for a pass rusher. And I thought that's kind of one of the big elements we were getting out of Michigan, was a guy who, he's going to, jab his arm into you and that it's going to hurt like hell. He's really not that guy at all. I mean, it's surprising.
Yeah, I agree with you. One of those physical, specimens. Just hope he doesn't follow down the path of how am I forgetting his name, out of Texas, who fell and hit his head.
Oh, right. Yeah. King somebody, King Surge. Sergio
Kindle. Yeah, Sergio Kindle. Yeah. I think actually they have some similar athletic profile between the two of them. And, you know, they just haven't quite hit on those freaky edge guys. They're more of the – they hit more on the three-down thumper, Matthew Judon, Za'Darius Smith, Terrell Suggs types, Pernell McPhee types for whatever reason. Just a coincidence, I guess.
They've done better on those. Oway is the counter example for that, and I think he's played well. But also Tyus Bowser. Whatever Ravens think of Tyus Bowser's finish to his Ravens career, Tyus Bowser was one hell of a freaking football player for the Ravens when he was on the field.
Yeah,
and he was certainly a different kind of a athletic fit that they got.
He would have been a good addition to this squad, considering their troubles. We have a Sam that can drop into coverage, would be tailor-made for the issues they're facing, I think, now. But unfortunately, he's in Seattle.
Yeah, did he get cut for a second time already? He may be available on the street again. I'm not even sure about that, but you might be right.
I'll look for it.
All right. Why don't we go to the mailbag, talk some questions here? I think we're done with everything else, but we got some good mailbag.
Injury report. We got to hit the injury report.
Please, hit us with the injury report.
Okay. So, as we mentioned, Michael Pierce is on IR. Travis Jones, Brent Urban, and Broderick Washington were all did not practice on Thursday. So obviously extremely concerning to be that thin at a crucial position group. On the bright side, the cornerbacks appear to be getting healthier. Marlon Humphrey, Nate Wiggins, and Arthur Maulette, who apparently suffered a neck injury different from the knee injury that kept them sidelined at the beginning of the year, were all either limited or full. But the one big one, all of a sudden now, John Harbaugh mentioned to the press that Lamar Jackson was resting on Wednesday, and then he did not suit up again on Thursday. That's 2 days in a row with a /knee. And that's certainly very concerning.
Yeah, obviously, all of these problems that can exist for the Baltimore Ravens don't matter at all if Lamar Jackson is hurt. They could fix every one of them. And we've seen from past seasons, it's still the end of the road if Lamar is not available. So, speedy recovery needed there. They won't get through a game with this team and Josh Johnson at the helm.
No. It
will not work. Nope. But they might have to try and get through till next Thursday without him. This is a time in the history of time here that I would stay way away from that Ravens line right now. I just don't trust it. But the other guy who's back and practicing full, a little bit of good news is Keaton Mitchell. Don't know if that means he's going to be activated this week. There's a lot of reasons why he wouldn't be, among those that the need to have space for other players like defensive linemen.
Yeah, I saw a brief clip of him doing some calisthenics and getting his knees up high above his head and looked pretty healthy to me. So, two games in 5 days coming up here now. So this is probably the worst time to be thin, but it is what it is. This is where that organizational depth that the Ravens cultivate and spend 12 months of the year cultivating comes into play, and hopefully they'll figure out a way to piece it together and get over this hump and get a nice mini bye before the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah, a very big deal all the way around. At least they're playing that game at home against Cincinnati, but it's not a great situation for them. Let's go to the mailbag. Couple questions here. Brian Taman has the first one. Longtime listener, love the podcast. Where does the option of moving Marlon to safety now rank amongst possible free safety type trade targets / free agent pickups to help the back end?
It's tough to move your best corner to safety when your corners are struggling a little bit. So, if they had a surplus of corners, that'd be a terrific option. But I think Marlon's been arguably the best player on the year, on defense at least. Not including Lamar, but yeah, on defense. So I wouldn't quite be in favor of that move quite yet.
Yeah, I'm in the same place. I think if you're in the middle of a game and you've got to do something because your safety is you're just out of options at safety, I think you could do it for the rest of a game. It's not something I would move to fix the season for yet. So I'm still hopeful that Marcus Williams can come back. I do think they need a guy for the back end. I still think they have a chance to trade for one by Tuesday. Marcus May would be one of the guys, who would be a possibility. And they have a few others around the Condé Diggs and some other people around the league who might be possible. And it's one of the few positions where I think the Ravens can spend some 2025 money. That is something that's come up in a lot of these trade discussions is, should the Ravens be thinking about going all in this year or with their current situation? And I don't know if they'll know what Jackson's situation is by Tuesday. Maybe they already do. And it's not good, but they may not know safety, defensive line, Jackson, any new injury that comes up. They may not really know where they are on Tuesday in terms of a chance to win the division, say. But I'd be opposed to going all in a year where they don't at least have a good chance to win the division and progress through the playoffs that way.
Yeah, if Lamar is expected to miss an extended period and knock on wood, he finished the game. Hopefully they're being extremely cautious this week. But yeah, if you're going to miss Lamar and you don't know when his, I would become potentially a seller, not a buyer. But if he is healthy, I do think that the offense is good enough that even if they got a wild card, I'd still make some moves around the margin. You know, this $700,000 here and a mid round pick or a late round pick. Certainly not going to start throwing around first round, second round picks. But anyway, let's move on to the next question from Jesse Niederberger. I know Ken didn't believe the Ravens needed a wide receiver who would take snaps from Flowers or Bateman. My question, in light of the trade for Johnson, do you think they could have survived an injury to Flowers or Bateman?
Would have hurt. So I like that. I like it from a insurance standpoint. I like the play. If they take any snaps away from Flowers or Bateman, I'm going the other direction on that. And Bateman is a little bit of a moving target. I think we know who Zay Flowers is, and I think we're loving the fact that he has 17.3 ADOT this last week, his highest of the year. And you know, you'd love to keep him in that sort of role where Deontay Johnson picks up some of this gadgetry. With Bateman, he's got 12.1 yards per target. That's fifth in the entire National Football League. He was first before this week with the 50-yard drop, or he'd still be first. It's the kind of thing that if you're really ready to give up on Bateman right now, I don't think you're really thinking clearly about the situation. There's just Deontay Johnson does not provide that sort of value. You're also, you know, Bateman's in the prime of his career right now, and Johnson is on the back end. He's a 6.2 yard per target guy this year, 6.8 in his career. Yes, he was 8.2 last year. But I think if you're really expecting him to be a lot better than 7, even with Jackson, meaning maybe he could be 7.5 with Jackson because it's a better situation. But I don't see some sort of enormous breakout where all of a sudden he's a 9.0 yards per target guy.
Yeah, he's a complimentary piece, I think, and that dovetails into the next question from Hugh Cole. Does the Johnson acquisition now make Bateman career year and good contract tradable for defensive help?
It's one of the best contracts in the NFL. You would have to extract top value for it right now. And frankly, if you look around at all the receivers in the NFL who might be available, Davante Adams and Josh and Rashad Bateman, who has more trade value? The answer is no freaking question in the world that Rashad Bateman has way more trade value than Davante Adams. It's not necessarily because Bateman's a better receiver right now, although that might be true. It's because he's signed for 3 years for peanuts.
Right.
And you know, it's an absurdly good. It'd be like trading for Jefferson after not that's a bad example, but it'd be trading like for a top receiver with 2 years left on his deal, say. If to try and get Bateman. So he's got one of the highest trade values in the entire National Football League, as counterintuitive as that seems to be.
I think it was a tremendous value on the contract. The one thing I think that Bateman still needs to improve upon to be considered one of the top 20 or so receivers is his hands, and not just the ball he lost in the sun, but there was an interception, I believe, week two. There's been some drops, and that's the one thing that's separating him. But for what he's giving you in comparison to what his cost is, no question, tremendous value there. Could be one of the best contracts on the team going forward. And wide receiver two is more valuable than almost every defensive position just on its face as well. So I'm definitely keeping Bateman in that scenario.
All right, jump on to the next question here, which is from Kid Rock 20. Guys, why do we have so many special teams only players? Have we done this one before? Because this is it seems like there have been versions of this, but it's a good one anyway.
We didn't know. This is the one I saw, I think, Tuesday or so.
All right. Why do we have so many special teams only players? Do we win special teams battles anymore? Feel like our kickoff returns are terrible relative to our opponents and bad decisions by our punt returner as well. Definitely true this last week, by the way, Kid Rock. Thanks for the question. The kickoff returners didn't realize they were in the end zone. Collier specifically, I think that Cleveland really went after him, and Harbaugh went out of his way to talk about a fair catch being made too deep. The old John Madden thing is, if it's inside the 8-yard line, just let it roll. You got a chance for a touchback right in that situation. And, you know, this was, I think he fair caught it at the 4.
Yeah, 4 of the 5. Even Rod Woodson was like, what the heck are you doing there? I completely agree. I heard that on the radio. Anyway, I completely agree with you, Kid Rock. Too many special teams only players. Ken and I made note of that throughout this series last season. And seems like Harbaugh used the kickoff rule to leverage the roster into more special teamers. And I don't think it was a great decision. The other part is you haven't gotten great impact from your draft class beyond the first few picks. So I guess he figures that, Bo Braid and Christian Welsh and those sort of players are giving you more than Adisa Isaac and the like. But I would much rather be in a position to have a surplus of outside linebackers or receivers or really any other position besides special teams, and just take the ball to 30. There's no margin there. It doesn't seem
right. And it does go both ways, because the other team can force you to make returns on kicks. But mm-hmm. I still don't think your marginal loss there is nearly as great as being without an interior defensive lineman, which right. is a disaster. So you really need to have that extra player on the margin. I've been screaming it all year round. I'm not trying to take a victory lap on this one. I'm just saying the Ravens played with fire about 3 times before it burned them on the 4th time. Maybe it's 4 times before it burned them on the 5th time. Mm-hmm. But it was not a good risk adjusted move. And they hopefully have understood that now and won't make it again. And in particular, when you bring up a bunch of guys who now won't have the same kind of snap load limits that the Big Five did. You know, Pierce, durable player. Travis Jones could play a lot of snaps. Josh Tupou, that's not going to be him. Anybody else they bring up, Chris Wormley at this point in his career. I mean, these are going to be guys you're going to have to be very careful on snap count with.
Yeah, and Harbaugh even said it, I believe it was his Monday presser 2 weeks ago, that, you know, we were expecting the kickoff rule to have an impact and it hasn't materialized. But he still hasn't made the adjustment to the game day activation. So I don't really know what else to say there, but it is certainly puzzling and a little bit disappointing.
All right. Always a pleasure to do this show with you, Voss. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online or find any work you have otherwise.
Sure. I am at Vasilis Fiamata on Twitter X. Happy to talk ball, talk about the team when it's good, when it's going well, talk about the team when it's going bad. Always enjoy this show with you, Ken. Really enjoy getting into the nuances of roster construction and the general manager perspective.
All right. Appreciate you too, my friend. And other folks out there, if you like this show, the best thing you can do for us, write us a review or go to a friend and talk to him about Friday Morning GM and what's going on. And it's a show worth listening to. Listens have been pretty good, but they could be better still. And I'm always looking to expand the listener base here and hopefully keep the content free for years to come. And that actually is a significant concern here. So we need a little more listenership to do that. But thanks anyway very much for listening. For Voss Larikos, this is Ken McKusick saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.
Wow, what's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.